Welcome to Distrust and Disparities, Dismantling Black Health Disparities podcast. We examine health disparities that disproportionately affect Black women and Black families. In addition, we amplify organizations and individuals working to dismantle racist health practices and systems to improve health outcomes for marginalized communities. I'm your host, Jasmine Moore, a registered nurse, and I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, Camille White.
In this episode, we discuss the 2024 theme for Black Maternal Health Week and have a conversation about the things that give us hope and joy for Black birthing people.
Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of Distrust and Disparities. Me and Camille, we have made it to the mic again. Not gonna lie, you know, it was a little rough getting here, and you know, the way these weekends are like speeding through, like, it's crazy, it's insane.
You blink your eyes, and all of a sudden, you thought you were still in Friday, and it's like, no, it's Sunday evening, and you need to prep for the week.
Exactly. You get a half a second to like decompress and do things. It's crazy. Like, you really have to be intentional with your rest. I feel like this is just the theme. But you really do, like, intentional with your time, because before you look, it's gone. And, you know, more research needs to be done into this 4-day weekend. No, into this 4-day work week. 4-day yes. Weekend would be great.
I mean,
right. We should skip to that. Like, let's skip to that. But anyway, let's jump into this episode, because, you know, that could be the episode, but it's not. So every April 11th through April 17th is Black Maternal Health Week. And it is a week-long campaign founded and led by the Black Mamas Matter Alliance to build awareness, activism, and community building to amplify the voices, perspectives, and lived experiences of Black mamas and birthing people. And it is intentionally held during National Minority Health Month, and it begins on April 11th. Which is the International Day for Maternal Health and Rights, which is an opportunity to advocate for the elimination of maternal mortality globally. And our podcast focuses on Black women and Black families, and we want to be a part of the conversation started by Black Mamas Matter Alliance, to basically intentionally center the values and traditions of the reproductive and birth justice movements. So, you know, when this episode comes out, it'll be on the tail end of Maternal Health Week, but we did want to have an episode where, you know, we have a discussion about the theme, and also, like we said, in the overview, you know, our hopes. So let's just review what the theme is for 2024. Each year they put out a very impactful and relevant theme. So the theme for Black Maternal Health Week for 2024 is Our Bodies Still Belong to Us, Reproductive Justice Now! Exclamation point on that. I feel like I need to read that with more emphasis. Our bodies still belong to us. Reproductive justice now.
Yes.
Exclamation point.
Yes.
I feel like I should be screaming. But I hope you get the point. You know, although, like, now. And when we were coming out with, like, the overview, we had the word, like, you know, the future of joy and hope. But in reality, we need this shit now. Mm-hmm. We, like you said, we needed it 200 years ago.
Yes.
You know, like,
We've been needed this. And it's, yeah, this theme too is like, yes, our bodies still belong to us. Not they just belong. They still belong to us. They've always belonged to us. And we are just, you know, unfortunately in a battle that we didn't think we'd have to be battling again for our reproductive rights, for reproductive justice. And as much as that sucks, it's, you know, time to focus in and hone on in and make sure you're paying attention to what's going on in your communities, your, you know, down to counties, cities, the local stuff, the state level, the federal level, and you're advocating for things that matter to you. And also, even if you're in, say, a state where, like, you're not feeling too much pressure, you're not feeling, like, look out for everybody else, though. You got to be thinking on a grander scale and not just be thinking, you know, at times so selfishly where it's just like, well, I'm good. And it's just like, but so many others aren't. And if you view it that way, eventually you won't be good. And that's how we ended up in the situation in the first place. And we have to look out for one another.
Yeah. And it's just sad, you know, our rights and our so-called liberties are just being undermined. And it's just like these laws, they don't reflect the majority of society, or, you know, it just doesn't reflect me personally. Think about your own self. Like, do these laws reflect you? And just being open-minded to change. Because as I would say, as I'm doing this podcast, like, it's making me stop and think about things. And also, we have time to explore, like, the history of things. Like you said, it's very frustrating. Like, we fought to have, you know, reproductive rights, reproductive justice, and then we're fighting again. Like, why are we using, like, the same time and energy to fight for the same things? And it's very, like, frustrating. Like, Mom, I keep saying like, but you know what? I keep saying like because I want to cuss.
Yes.
Why? So you can keep that in, but, you know, I'm frustrated.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, it.
Also, remember, I can always throw in a little bleep when need be.
Right. Thank you. I forgot. You edit this, though. So you can.
Because I've been keeping in the curse words because, honestly, sometimes it's just. Not even sometimes, a majority of the time, it's infuriating what we're dealing with and the things that we're discussing. And so if the curse words flow, they flow. The point is still important. What we're discussing is still important. That doesn't take away anything from it. And I can throw in a little bleep and we can keep it going and people can continue to hear the important information.
Yes. And we want this episode to be a discussion, a conversation, because this is how we normally converse before we, you know, jump into our episodes and we, you know, review stuff in a sequential order. But this is how we really feel. And just getting back to the theme, our bodies still belong to us, reproductive justice now, and they break down Black Mamas Matter. Widespread restrictions on abortion care access, coupled with rising cases of criminalization due to pregnancy loss, continue to widen the gaps of adverse maternal and birth outcomes in the U.S. And if you look at some of the cases that we've recently discussed, why are we spending our money to, you know, police women's bodies and what happens? Like, people are not educating themselves on, you know, the prevalence of miscarriages and stillbirths. And by banning, you know, abortions and things like that, hospitals are trying to basically, you know, do what's best to protect their interests and their money over people. Like, we're seeing that, like, it's just messing things up. Mm-hmm. And we're not putting in more structures to support families. And Black Mamas, they highlight, it says, many of the states with the most restrictive abortion bans have the worst maternal and child health outcomes and the least supportive social welfare and family support programs, particularly for Black women and birthing people. And that fact alone, just like, okay, let's ban abortions. We want people to have babies. We want people to have babies. But we're not going to do anything to support the people giving birth and the babies once we get here. Like, mm-hmm. it's not safe to have this baby. You know, you might not even have access to the health insurance to have this baby. Mm-hmm. You may not, well, look at me, May. You don't have the time off to raise this baby.
Ain't that the truth?
Or you're not getting paid when you're off to raise said baby. Mm-hmm. Your baby, you know, formula, what you gonna feed your baby is expensive. Even if you breastfeeding, what you gonna feed yourself to support this baby? When you send your child to school, is it safe for your baby to grow up? Like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, no. At all.
It never has, but it's just, it's so upsetting when, like, time and time again, like, all these things are pointed out to these people who enact these restrictive bans. And then they'll make all the excuses in the world as to, like, why that's not important, where it's just like, I'm sorry, why are you an elected official going against giving free food to children? What is actually wrong with you that you feel some sort of way about a child? You're saying a child has to go to school, a school that they're not going to be safe in, on top of that. And the least that you can do is make sure that they're fed. Cause then you go, well, that's on the parent. Well, the parent can't feed the child because you're paying the parent. It's a wage. It's pennies. It's crumbs. It's nothing that they could barely support themselves on, let alone bring a child up in a way that would help them thrive. And then, well, like, they need to get a better job, or why did they even have kids? And just like, did you even have any sort of comprehensive health discussion about, like, sex health and, you know, responsibility of, like, how, like, avoiding STIs and getting pregnant, all those, like, there's so many things where it's just like, there's all these holes in every argument that they try to bring up of, like, well, you didn't have to be in the situation. No, you set up the system to make it where they're going to be in the situation, because you want to keep people poor, you want to keep people ignorant, and you want people to struggle, because if they're so focused on their own struggle, they won't pay attention to, like, the grander scheme of how you're just oppressing people all over the place. And it's so upsetting. It's so upsetting because, like, y'all want to force people to have children, some of whom don't even want to have children. And then you want to force people to carry a non-viable life, even when they want kids. And it's just, it's not going to work out because, oh, well, now we're not sure if blah, blah, blah. I just want to punch all these people in the face.
Right. It's just like, make it make sense. Like, okay, have the baby. Okay. So we're going to help you have that baby. We're going to help you raise that baby. We're going to make it safe to have that baby. You would think that would be the next step, but it's like, no, just have that baby. Like, that's it. And then you remember, it was like, I can't think of it, but it was like, I think it was a senator or somebody in the government. They was like, you know, people need to have more babies because we need more people working, and that's it. We need more people paying into Social Security and all these other structures. Like, we need your babies basically to work, to support us, to support this government. Like, the whole system needs to be fixed. Like, the whole system needs to be fixed. And Black Mamas Matter, they say this perfectly. Like, there's no other way to say it, but they said, the time is now to demand for comprehensive public and private insurance for maternal, sexual, and reproductive health care, improving access to care across geographies and birth settings, issuing guidance to healthcare providers, institutions, insurance companies, and related entities on providing equitable, high-quality, patient-centered care, and funding research and programs that center and utilize scholarship of Black women and birthing people. And you can go to Black Mama Matters Alliance. They have a comprehensive policy agenda, and you get the full breakdown. But the fact of the matter is, it's time to listen to Black women. That's it. It's time to really listen to Black women. Like, and we haven't been doing that. And it needs to be done. That's the only thing. We need to listen to Black women, and we need to listen to birthing peoples. The reason we want to do this episode is because, honestly, we're tired of hearing about the deaths, and, you know, it keeps happening. Can we hear about what is being done to prevent the deaths? What is going on? You know, what are people doing? What is working? So that's why we wanted to have this episode. We wanted to have this conversation just to discuss the theme and where you can go with the theme to get more information, to learn from. Like I said, this is an alliance. So there are lots of organizations working together to bring about hope and change. So let's listen to them. Let's listen, you know. Yes, on this podcast, we talk about specific cases, but, you know, we just wanted to pause and, like, hey, let's listen. Let's talk about what's going on, what's being done.
Have you checked out our website? There you can find all of our episodes and show notes. You can even listen directly on the site and catch up on any previous episode you may have missed. You can read our bios and see what we're up to. Also, we made it even easier to contact us. Just fill out the form on our homepage and click submit. We invite you to recommend guests and topics we should feature. So what are you waiting for? Go check us out at distrustanddisparities.com. So Jasmine found this incredible quote from the article Birthing Black: Community Birth Centers as Portals to Gentle Futures. And it just perfectly summarizes not only the maternal health issues in this country, and then really goes in hand with Black Maternal Health Week, but it just perfectly says it all, and there's no other way that we could possibly say it. So increasingly, media coverage frames Black maternal health as a crisis. While attention to Black maternal health is certainly overdue, the current narrative does not offer a structural analysis of the root of the problem, nor affirm Black power. This dominant narrative and the data and assumptions that result create fear in Black birthing people, cast Black birthing bodies as the problem, either explicitly or inadvertently, and suggest that white maternal health outcomes, white birthing bodies, and a white-dominated birthing system are the norms to which we should aspire. The resulting public health response is to close the gap and aim to level the rates of Black maternal and infant outcomes to match those of the white population. The truth, though, is that maternal health outcomes across the U.S., including for white populations, are atrocious when compared to similarly economically advanced countries in which midwives are the leaders in providing maternity care and designing the systems of care. The narrative of a Black maternal health crisis ties the crisis to one racial group and ignores the fact that the system is not working particularly well for anyone, and that because of structural racism, the system bears down inequitably on Black birthing bodies. In fact, we argue that because of structural racism, policies and practices that implicitly or explicitly uphold white supremacy, the entire U.S. faces a crisis of maternal health.
Girl.
And it's just every single word and point made is so true. It's just, this is what it is. And I think we've discussed this in discussing the maternal health crisis previously, that, yeah, if you compare the numbers of just everybody and not just looking at Black people, looking at our community, we're in the gutter. Like, the U.S. has been in the gutter, and we continue to be in the gutter. And I think it is important, especially hearing this and moving forward, of not going, it's a Black maternal health crisis. No, it's a maternal health crisis across this whole raggedy country. Ain't nobody thriving like they should be. Yet I thought we were so rich. I thought we were so great. Where are the funds for the maternity stuff? And also the point two of the countries that have midwives as leaders, because they should be. Midwifery was where it was at. That was, you're given the care and concern from women and birthing people who understand, you know, our bodies in such an intricate way, and value not just the life that you're bringing into the world, but the life that's like sustaining it and cultivating it. And it's just like midwifery, I need, it's having to come up, but I need it to come up more.
Yeah. And that, you know, brings us to the point, like, we want to see, you know, more community, more Black joy, instead of just focusing on the crisis, like, it's a crisis. And, you know, just focusing, saying, oh, it's just a Black crisis. No, it's a hot mess all over. And like we always say, improving the outcomes for Black people and other communities. And we used to use the term marginalized, but we're not marginalized. It's like a lack of resources. That's what it comes down to. We need more resources. And it just shows the outcomes suck for everyone, but we are disproportionately being affected. And I believe doulas, midwives, and community birth practitioners are going to be the solution to this problem. Like, birth does not just have to take place in a hospital. It can take place in different settings. And we also need a community. Like, we need a community supporting women or birthing individuals. You know, there needs to be a change. And like the quote highlighted, you know, in countries where it's, you know, they're not having this issue on such a magnitude, they have midwives, and midwives are the leaders. And, you know, the term midwives and companies, doulas, and just, you know, the different practitioners, you know, moms, it's a generational thing. And we have to go back to like our ancestry and original practices. And if you go back and listen to like some of our previous episodes, specifically like James Marion Sims, and just look at like the violent history of the gynecology field and just how white men took over the birthing process, because basically they're like, okay, if this is a way to get money, people are always having babies, it's a business. This is, they not only have one patient, they have two patients. So they have the mom and they have the baby. So they, you know, violently push their way into the maternity field because they want money. They're like, oh, and this is just kind of like a summed up, but go listen to our previous episodes. They're like, you know, they made it their business to kind of discredit, you know, granny midwives who would travel far and wide to, you know, take care of like women who were giving birth in their communities. And they just kind of shifted it to say, oh, it's not safe to give birth at home. You need to come to the hospital. And basically when you get to the hospital, it's just a whole rush process. Cause in actuality, the body is designed to give birth like naturally, unless, you know, in, you know, certain circumstances and, you know, more people are having babies older, that's when it can become high risk. But in normal, you know, low risk pregnancies, the body has everything it needs to give birth. It may take a while. So we have all these interventions to basically kind of speed up the process. And I know, Camille, you put up a good point when we were creating the outline for this episode, just how C-sections became a thing with celebrities. I'm going to let you talk about that and go ahead.
Yeah, because I remember like years ago, that was the thing to do, because our society, like, it's a weird contradicting thing of like, you're a woman if you have kids, and you should want to have kids because you're a woman and that's your role to play. But also you need to maintain that body. So you can't give up your body. You can't have your titties sag. You can't have your, you know, your whole vagina blown open. Oh, no man wants that. Like, there's all these things that just don't make sense and don't really value us for just being, you know, human beings. Simple as that. It's always like, what can we offer instead of just like appreciating us for who we are? And it felt like a craze. And I don't know, I guess I'm not hearing about it as much, but it was just like, people were just planning to have C-sections just for the sake of having C-sections. They were just like, oh yeah, I've had mine scheduled for this date. And like, I'm going to go in. And it's like, that's a major surgery. And it's not out of like, you know, an abundance of caution, or you've had previous labors vaginally and you were told by your doctor, hey, I don't think we should do it again. We should probably do a C-section. Pregnancy labor has become so overly medicalized that like the mindset was like, oh yeah, I'll just like, they'll just go in and get the baby out and bang, bam, boom. And that's it. And it's just like, I'm sorry, what? Like you said, the body is meant to do this. This is a biological function of birthing people's bodies. And we're not saying medical intervention isn't something that is needed, but it should only be used when it is truly needed. When there is a, you know, issue, a complication that is going to cause potential harm to the birthing person, to the baby, then you intervene to be like, okay, now we got to get in there because like something ain't right. A vaginal birth just ain't the way to go. But like to automatically just be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna just do a C-section because yeah, I just want one. And it's like this mindset too of like, I don't want, you know, my baby to do all that to my body. And it's just like, or even I think too how people have viewed, and again, it's your, you get to make your own opinions. And I hope it, like you get to make your own choices for your body. But the thing is about the opinions, I feel like they've been based off of propaganda that you've been fed. So when you aren't really getting the true information, then you're making this biased opinion that you feel is like your own choice, but you were fed lies and misinformation. And had you known everything, your choice might have been different. It makes me think of like breastfeeding. And I remember, I don't hear it as much anymore, but I heard a lot of people talking about like, oh, I don't want my kids to mess up my boobs. Like, oh, like, and it's this thing of like, oh no, I'm not going to do that. And it's just like, if you don't want to breastfeed, that's fine. But I need you to have like all the knowledge, all the information about it, you know, the benefits of it. And like, if you can't do that, that's fine. There's formula. But also then you need to give a breakdown to someone that maybe like, of course, because this world and money, you need to have money to buy anything. Formula is expensive. So if you can possibly breastfeed, you might want to look into breastfeeding because that formula might empty out your pocket real quickly. But I remember like so many, it was all attached to the breast and not messing up the breast, when again, that's all because society has told women that like, if you don't have perky titties and like you're less valuable, you're not seen as like, you know, as someone that's attractive. Or even then that goes into like the mommy makeover of like, you better snap back, you better, because then people are looking at, again, celebrities that, you know, they had a kid and it was only like a month ago and look at their body. Oh my goodness. They're back to normal. They're back. And it's just like, what? No, you just gave life. Why is it that we have to all of a sudden now be back to what? You want to have sex with them now again? Because like, heaven forbid, you see a real natural body where it's like their stomach clearly is someone who gave birth. Their vagina is that of someone who clearly gave birth. Like, it's just been so frustrating, and I don't see it as much anymore. And I think maybe we're getting better with some things, but that still lingers. And it was a whole propaganda campaign. And I feel like spearheaded by a lot of men that were basically telling women, have the baby, but look like you didn't have the baby.
It's make crazy. That make sense. Yeah. And speaking of propaganda, like you said, there was a lot of propaganda to like push out midwives and doulas, and we need more information, and we're going to bring on experts just to talk about, you know, the differences between doulas and midwives. And so, you know, your options, what you can have at birth, things you should be looking out for, you know, just support for yourself when you decide to have a child, you know, And this should be a joyous moment. So having someone there that looks like you or is there to support and comfort you. And I just believe doulas and midwives, they're really going to be the solution. And we need to figure out how to integrate them back into the birthing culture. Like, this should be the norm. Larger cities, New York, NYC, are starting to like implement doulas and have programs for everyone. Everybody should have access to a doula or a midwife. And a lot of times it's getting this information out and also supporting programs, like spread the word. Like, sometimes people think like, oh, you know, people who are rich or have like a lot of money and can just stay at home and be pregnant. But no, there's options for everyone. So if you're planning to have a family, if you're pregnant right now, please look into your insurance. Insurance companies are covering doulas and midwives because, you know, this is costing money to the hospital and things like that. So please look into your insurance plans, look into your community, because there are options out there to have a doula or a midwife to support you. So please take the time, and we'll talk about this more. And, you know, while we're here, our best friend Lori from high school, she just completed her doula training program. Like, she's a trained yoga professional. And we had the conversation, we were talking about doulas and things like that. So I'm really excited for her. I think she will be a wonderful, amazing doula. Mm-hmm. Can support you with like maternal yoga. I just think she's like the right person. And, you know, we're getting together next month. I can't wait to pick her brain. You know, I've been, you know, shooting my shot like, girl, you should come on the podcast. Come on the podcast. Talk about what's going on. But I'm going to pick her brain once I see her so I can know. Because, you know, I was thinking about doing a doula program, but I'm honestly still scarred from my maternal health program in college. And that was like years ago. Like, I'm just scared. So, you know, hopefully she can get her training. Maybe I could like volunteer with her just to get another experience, because I'm really like scarred. But, you know, I need to get a new experience. Like, I love like the documentaries that I'm watching about like births and like home births. And it's just a completely different vibe from, you know, my maternity, you know, health course and, you know, just having like birth at a hospital. So I'm excited to pick her brain and just learn what she learned. And, you know, I'm excited for her to just be an amazing doula you know, experience all this. And, you know, I feel like, so our friend Lori, she's a teacher, but she's getting like some healthcare training, maternity training. And I feel like I, as a nurse, I'm learning education stuff and trying to teach people. So kind of crossing over there. So, yeah, wanted to throw that in there. And just speaking about like birth and what it should look like. One other thing that gives me hope is that there's an increase in Black-owned birthing centers. So I've been seeing a lot, like, I know, I think it was like Virginia, Philly, Seattle, but it was like a bunch of different places. It was like, oh, a Black-owned birthing center opened. Even here in like the Bronx, they're getting the funds to open up a birthing center, or they have like a mobile bus to support, you know, birthing individuals, especially in specific communities where the mortality rates are high, or, you know, there's, you know, lack of resources in certain places. So it's really good. And it says less than 5% of birth centers are owned by Black or Indigenous folks or other people of color. But it says this could change as we're seeing like an increase of midwives and doulas. They're opening up facilities to support birthing individuals. And this is much needed. When we watched the documentary that we discussed, just seeing the difference between the hospital and a birthing center, it just looks so warm, so inviting. You can have like your family there. And it just seems at ease, like, you know, you're preparing for this baby to come. It just doesn't seem rushed, but you have everything that you need. And, you know, there was like a push, and we can investigate it on like another episode, where people were just like, just the attack on birthing centers and like doulas. But it's like, it's a risk to have a, it's a risk to have a baby at a hospital. There's a risk, you know, yes. So you might as well be somewhere where you're comfortable and you have like the support. But there was like this whole propaganda, like you were saying, like, oh, it's not safe to, you know, give birth, you know, at home or in this, but it's not safe. The alternative is not safer as well. So it's just like, it's have to do your research for everything.
You really do. You can't blindly trust, especially you have to be like, who's saying that? Who's saying it's not safe? What are the numbers? Let's compare the numbers, because I've seen plenty of stories of so many people that go to hospitals and have birth and then are like, hey, something's off, something's wrong, and then are ignored by not just one person in the room. There's a multitude of people at a whole institution, at a whole medical facility that ignores this person's pleas, their family's pleas of, hey, something ain't right. And then that person unfortunately passes away. And it was something that, had you paid attention, had you acknowledged, listened to these Black women, these Black birthing people, you could have intervened and saved their lives. But instead, you were more focused on, well, the baby's out and like, whatever. It's like, you don't even care about the person who gave birth anymore, because, well, the baby's out and they'll figure it out. They'll be fine.
Exactly. Like, the whole system just needs to just change. And like you said, we try to focus on the good things. The good things is that more birthing centers are opening. You know, hopefully more people, even if there's not like a Black owned center, please explore like the birthing centers in your areas to see if you have access to them, and just, you know, take a tour, see what it is, see if your insurance will cover it, because that's a big thing. And I know we keep saying we're not going to focus on the negative, but if you got time to look up, like, it was this story of like, it was this white woman, she was giving birth to like triplets, and I believe they had to like stay in like the NICU or something like that. But it was like the cost of like the birth or just being pregnant. I believe the mom had to like quit her job so she could qualify for Medicaid, because the bill was just like insane. And I feel like I'm kind of off topic, but it's just like, you paying all this money to have birth in the hospital and things like that, and, you know, it's not adding up. Like, we're spending all this money, but we're not getting the results that we need. But to bring it back, you know, I am glad that there is an increase in birthing centers, and not only birthing centers, doulas and midwives. I'm seeing more advertisements of like doula programs and trainings and things like that. So I am excited. I'm excited. Yeah.
If you are enjoying this episode, you should consider buying us a coffee. Yes, a coffee. That small gesture will help us continue to create quality episodes and content. Click the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes, or check out our website at distrustanddisparities.com.
The last thing I want to talk about that I was like, ooh, this is really, really good. Guaranteed income for low-income new moms. And there's this project in New York. It's just called the Bridge Project. And it says, basically, the Bridge Project seeks to eradicate childhood poverty. It is the nation's first and largest unconditional cash program for babies. So starting during pregnancy through the first 1,000 days of the baby's life, basically the mothers are given cash to support, you know, their child, and they can do, you know, whatever with it. And, you know, basically research shows like, all that money is going to the child so that you can support the child. And I learned about this program. I was taking an education course, like a training, to learn just about the complexities surrounding mandated reporting. So basically, like maybe her APS, CPS, like Child Protective Services, like Adult Check Protective Services. So, you know, if you work, say, even with kids or adults, if you suspect abuse, you know, they want you to report it. But through the training, I learned that, you know, this program, it basically came about like we're basically criminalizing people who don't have like resources. It's just about, you know, most it came about because a lot of people, they were forced to work. So sometimes they had to leave their child behind. And it's basically people who have the resources and the means were kind of looking down like, look at them. They're not doing this. They're not doing this. And basically, I'm going to summarize it, but, you know, we'll probably have like an episode to like break this down. But it comes down to like a lack of resources. Studies show that when people are not, you know, worried about, you know, how they're going to take care of their basic needs, they have, you know, the time, the energy to be, you know, the best parents that they can be. And when they don't, that's when you see like the cases of like abuse and neglect, it goes up. And a lot of times, these agencies that are designed to investigate these issues, all they do is investigate. They can't solve these problems. They can't do anything. So, and we're spending so much money on these agencies just to investigate these families and just call them out and basically highlight what they, like, you left your child to go for a job interview, but, you know, we're not giving you a resource like, oh, here's something where you can, you know, take your child so that you can interview. And we're not helping people. We're just criminalizing poverty and making it harder. So programs like the Bridge Project, and there's a lot more programs that there's a lot of studies coming up where they're giving money to moms so that they can support their child so that they can, you know, they're not worried about like how they're going to get formula, how they're going to get diapers. You know, they have that money. And even sometimes it's like you may be low income and it's like, okay, I'm making it. Being able to just put aside a little bit of money for like a rainy day, because, you know, things come up, just having that like, okay, you could save because you might be working for your last dollar and every penny. So it's just like, you know, okay, I got a little saved up for like a rainy day, anything that can just kind of take things. I don't have to pick up this extra shift. You know, I can take care of my child. I can focus on my family. And it's just like, we need to be investing in more programs like this where we can support moms and children. Like we said, we're trying to eradicate childhood poverty, you know, just because the cycle is just going to continue. So we need programs to help break these cycles, to prevent the same things from happening over and over. Like, we really need to like listen to moms and what they need. And, you know, how can we support you? What can we do better? But we're not. All we're doing is like penalizing, criminalizing, and just making it harder. And it's just, you know, it sucks, but it's like, we need more of this. Like, let's help people. Like,
this is how you help people in a capitalist world where there's so many structural issues, especially when it comes to racism and how it negatively impacts us, Black community, Indigenous community, people of color. Like, give people money. Give them cash. You give them cash and all of a sudden, yes, it's like, it's not, you know, a miracle cure for all the ailments and issues and things that they will encounter, but that will definitely help. Like you said, being able to put aside money, being able to go, you know what? I don't have to take that extra shift. You know what? I have a little bit saved up over here for if something should occur, or even like that allows them to even have better joyous moments with their kids, yes, and bringing them up where you don't have to deny your child something because you can't afford it. You can only spend money on the necessities. That could mean, you know, a parent being able to give their child, you know, ice cream randomly here or there. And it's like, yeah, those little small moments of joy shouldn't be stolen simply because someone is poor. Like, that's exactly, like, that's what this system does. And it criminalizes these parents when it's like, that's not the move. That's not the look. If we truly care about helping people, like, this, these programs like this are what is needed.
Yeah. Like, investing in, you know, people, it makes a difference. And it's like in every aspect of life. Mm-hmm. We're spending more money on, say, policing, militarization, and things like that, but we're cutting mm-hmm. libraries, we're cutting extracurricular activities, you know, drama program, music programs from school.
All the arts.
Like, we're just making it easier to make this prison, school to prison pipeline. We're just making like ramps to those things. And it's like, no, kids need after school programs. You know, moms need maternity leave, you know, not to be stressing. The cost of daycare alone. Like, there's like some places where it's like, you know, they pay for, you know, daycare is free. Like, you want people to work, you want people to make money, but then where are we going to put our child at?
Daycare is costing more than people's mortgages or rents. And it's just like, that is so insane. And then you don't even pay people enough to even afford the rent, the mortgage, let alone be able to afford childcare. And not everyone is fortunate to maybe have a support system in their family to be able to watch their kid. So it's like, it's all these things where it's just like, we, the system has set people up for failure. And in particular, it's poor people, because mm-hmm. it just demonizes them as though they're poor because of their own actions, and they're there for their own reasons, and it's completely outside of anybody else, any system. And like, that's an outright lie. Mm-hmm. That is an outright lie. And we need to acknowledge that and like actually work to change it. And like, the Bridge Project is helping do that.
Yeah. And it's not only the Bridge Project, there's a lot of programs and that are trying to give, you know, not only income to new moms, but just low income people in general. You know, people need, like we said, it comes down to resources. A lot of why we have these disparities and these issues, why we have terms marginalized communities, third world countries, is because certain people are hoarding resources mm-hmm. and, you know, they don't care because, you know, like, we'll be fine. But it's like, other people are really struggling, and let's help people, you know. And that's why we, you know, we created this podcast, so that we can highlight organizations, people that are working to, you know, dismantle these horrible structures. Because as the more and more we do each case, it's like, you know, this is the history. We try to tackle it here, then push back, white backlash, mm-hmm. this and that. It's just like, come on. Can we stop doing this? Can we listen? Can we help people? Like, we know what we gotta do, but instead they be like, okay, we tell them, oh, this is a problem, okay, let's study it. And then it's like, no, let's support the programs that are actually out here working. They need funds. They're doing miracles with a limited funds. They're trying to figure out how to stay sustainable. If they didn't have to worry about, you know, where they're gonna get their funds, like, they would be able to do so much more and be able to help people. And, you know, I'm going to put it out there. Like, our goal with this podcast, like, in the long run, like, I'm just going to manifest, you know, we would love to, you know, get sponsors or some type of, you know, grants or funding, so that we can give money to, like, the organizations, the people that we shout out. Like, that's the big goal. Yeah. Like, we want to, you know, we want to give them money. You know, we're trying to, you know, with our words, we're trying to advertise and put them out. But it would be great to just be able to slip something, like, you know, when somebody slip you a 20 or, you know, you find some money, even if it's your own money, you find like that feeling like.
Yes. We want to like stuff. Pay it forward because like they're doing amazing work and we want to make sure, like you said, they can be sustainable, continue on. And it's just like, here's some more money. Like we shouted you out. Know, here's your
it's
free.
Not much, but it's a little
it's something. Little something.
That's the goal. Or if you know somebody, if you're listening and you know somebody that want to help us do this, let us know. I'm gonna figure it out, girl. We're gonna figure this out. You know, we're gonna do something. We're gonna figure it out. But we appreciate everyone for listening. Thank you.
Yes,
we appreciate it. Sharing the word, you know, putting it out there. We appreciate it. Like, that's all that matters. Like, we looked at like the number of people that listen and I was like, oh my God, like people really listen to us. But that's another thing. But we do want to say we appreciate everyone that listens, that, you know, follows, shares, likes, but, you know, listening to a full episode, it really matters. And we're glad you're listening to us talk about other organizations, talk about like our hopes, our dreams, you know. Like we said, we want hope and joy, not in the future. Like, we want it now. We want hope, joy, rest, sustainability. We want it now.
Now.
It's the word. We need it now.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Do you have recommendations for topics we should discuss about health disparities or injustices? Guests we should interview doing amazing health justice work, or organizations we should highlight creating positive change for marginalized communities? Please visit us at distrustanddisparities.com or email us at distrustanddisparities@gmail.com. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. And follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Thank you.